flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Gillespie, and Rodney Rice will inbound. He gets it inbounds to Gillespie. Gillespie goes to the rim, lost the ball, kicks it back out front to Juju. 9 on the shot clock. Jumper on the way. That's good! A three-pointer by Rice with 7.1 seconds to go. Maryland's up by 1, and a timeout is called Indiana.
Galloway will inbound on the inline onto the Indiana basket. Goes to the corner. There's a desperation shot at the buzzer, and the Terrapins will win it. They knock off Indiana.
Yeah, you know, Chris, I decided to go for the win. We were going to run a hammer for Rod, and then a rescreen for Selk coming off, and you know, being on the road as hard, and not subbing, having those guys out there, I was like, overtime's probably not going to be our friend. I think Kobe, he realized how open he was, and he thought, oh, I'm just going to go lay it up and tie it. They got a good deflection, but Julian showed how much he's come as a player. He didn't try to shoot it. He just gave it, and Rod hit a huge shot.
So you heard the highlights. Heard right here on 105.7 The Fan. Johnny Holiday on the call with Chris Knocke as the game was right here on The Fan. And then you heard Kevin Willard after the game. He said he was going for the win. Terps, they seemed to grab defeat from the jaws of victory, but then they took victory right back. They win and sweep the road trip, winning at Indiana 79-78 yesterday.
I mean, look, let's start with the result. It's a result-based business. We have been... underwhelmed by their ability to get results on the road in some less hostile, less daunting environments than this. So getting that win is huge. Finding a way to sort of recalibrate after, let's face it, another final 5 minutes of a game stretch where they let things get away. And really, you know, from about the 9.5 minute mark until about the 1 minute mark, this thing was going in a bad direction. But despite blowing a 10-point lead at 73-63 with 9 minutes and 34 seconds to go, despite having to then find themselves playing from behind, they did show some poise. They showed composure, and they found a way to win a game that they have found ways to lose countless times. That's a good Indiana basketball team. Those kids are good Big Ten basketball players. They have 2 legitimate bigs. Luckily, their best 3-point shooter was in foul trouble most of the night. But that's a very decent basketball team that was desperate, that needed a home win badly. And hats off to Kevin Willard's group for finding a way to get it done. Were there things that left me scratching my head? Yeah, the total sort of abandonment of any kind of down low game. You know, no lobs, no activation of the Twin Towers in the second half. Things certainly got scattered. They got a little helter-skelter. They started turning the ball over with that 10-point lead. Shot selection with that 10-point lead left something to be desired. But they've now strung together three straight conference wins, and you don't feel like this Wisconsin home game is a must-win. I think they can play a little looser with that one and maybe keep this thing going.
It was massive, a massive, and it would have been a gut punch of a loss if they would have blew that double-digit lead on the road. And that is a game that we have seen them lose repeatedly this year, especially on the road. And it's a one-point win, and we gave the stats a couple weeks ago where Kevin Willard in games decided by 6 points or less, and they were able to do it in a different way where... You mentioned it, Jason. Illinois, they just dominated in the paint. They scored 64 points in the paint. They only scored 30 in this game. They were outscored in the paint. Indiana was able to get theirs. They were able to do it because of their guard play. And Rodney Rice, welcome back to the party.
Yeah,
because
baby.
Prior to yesterday, the prior month, Rodney Rice was shooting 29% from three-point land. So if they can get him right, and we know how he's scrappy defensively, but that shot was massive, and he was hitting massive shots repeatedly yesterday.
Couple of things. Number one is, as Sunshine Jimmy Patsis himself has told me many times, never apologize for a win.
Exactly.
So you win a road game in the conference, that's huge. But to your point, Jason, I think Miguel went on a heat check early in the second half.
8-0 run.
And I think they started falling in love with that.
And they played a zone daring them to keep shooting it. And rather than take more time off the clock and be more selective and wait for a backdoor cut or try to drive and dribble drive penetrate, they started settling for the outside shot.
Now, they had some open looks. They just missed them. And that's what you want when you're playing zone. The turning point in the game could have been, would have been the Selton Miguel dribble the air out of the ball to the point where he falls down, and then it's a turnover that leads to an N1 the other way. If they lose this game, that's going to be the point I look back to. But as they have, and I was talking to Beltway Ben about this off the air, they were able to come back against Marquette. They weren't able to finish, but they came back against Marquette. They were able to come back against Northwestern, force overtime, should have forced a second overtime. This team does scrap. They do fight. And after getting down five, they were able to come back and steal this game. So while there are some things that, as you said, gave you pause, you win, and now you got a chance to make it four this Wednesday at home.
Yeah, for me, the turning point was they get up 73-63. Rice makes that great cut, hits that three from the wing, and then they give the other Rice the easy baseline three on the other side, and then that's when things, to me, started snowballing the other way. And next thing you know, you're chasing the game, and you're not playing your game anymore, and you're kind of on your heels. Regardless, they have now started to look like a team that can find different ways to win, different templates to win, right, versus like every... I mean, early in the year when they looked good, let's be real, everything was being played at a breakneck pace. They were playing either teams on neutral sites or home, which was advantageous to them, and they were able to dictate pace. They look now like a team that we saw Illinois, their seven-footers out, right, everything down low, 64 points in the paint, as Bone pointed out. Indiana, not a great three-pointing shooting team. It was Gillespie alone shooting threes wasn't going to be enough. So Miguel gets in the mix. Rice gets in the mix. We win with our guard play. We've seen them now alternate between both bigs on the court at the same time, and then also having stretches where they play plus basketball in the plus-minus department with just one big on, kind of changing up their size, changing up their looks. I'm glad that Willard's leaned into that a little bit. It's just crazy what can happen in a week. Because we're sitting here a week ago saying they damn near pissed away a 9-point lead in the final few minutes to Nebraska at home.
Yeah.
And now they're on a three-game winning streak.
Well, I go back to what I was saying heading into the stretch, how this 3 of 4 on the road could define their season. It could define their season, obviously, in a big, big plus year, where you already won your first two road games. You're facing a ranked Wisconsin team on Gold Rush night. I mean, it should be rocking at the Xfinity Center. And then you play at Ohio State, a team that you dominated back in December. I mean, if you take 3 of 4 in this stretch, which you're already off to a really good start, I mean, then the home games start going your way.
We have a huge Monday show. Obviously, we will get to the championship games yesterday. The Super Bowl is set. We will discuss that. Todd Monken looks like he's getting a contract extension. We will get to that. But guest-wise, we'll talk some baseball, specifically Orioles baseball, with our friend Jacob Calvin Meyer, covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun at 4 o'clock. Gene Wang covers the Terps for the Washington Post. He'll join us at 4:30. And our buddy Cordell Woodland, he just got done with Vinny. We'll get his thoughts on the Ravens offseason and also, obviously, the Commanders, who lost yesterday. He joins us at 5.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes, it is inevitable. If you weren't already used to it, get used to it. Some very interesting comments from Orioles ownership last week that we didn't really get to in the midst of deconstructing the Ravens season, but I think warrants a much deeper dive. We're back to bitching about a non-existent salary cap?
Really? Yeah.
I mean, was there a salary cap when you bought the team a year ago? Like, really? This is what we're going to get, a bunch of one-year stopgap deals, and now we're complaining about the economics of baseball again? Okay. All right.
It was definitely
okay.
It was definitely interesting. Coming up next, we'll keep the Terp talk going as we'll hear from Coach Kevin Willard, who spoke after the game. And could this team make it for Wednesday at home against Wisconsin? That's next here on the.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
Yeah, I mean, especially since we didn't practice. You know, the Thursday night game, you know, we didn't get back to the hotel, and those guys, I don't think we didn't leave the conference room till like, you know, midnight their time, 1 o'clock this time. So Friday was a wasted day. We didn't really do anything Friday, and then I'm gonna have my hands tied because, you know, we didn't practice yesterday. We just did a walkthrough, we did some shots. We got a really good Wisconsin team coming in, you know, only 2 days. So we gotta get back, put the game plan in tomorrow.
So that's Kevin Willard talking after the game, and Wisconsin comes to town. That's on the 29th, so that's a couple days away. As we sit here, it's January 27th, so yeah, it's 3 days away. So, alas,
Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it's Wednesday. So today's Monday, 2 days from today. So yeah, he said 2 days, but that was yesterday.
Yes,
he meant 2 days.
That was my confusion. But yeah, they had a great road trip. They did not come home after the game Thursday. They stayed out in the Midwest, and it seemed to do well for them.
Something that bears monitoring, and you mentioned this following their prior game, Jason, against Illinois. They did not play their bench at all yesterday again, particularly in the second half. So with another quick turnaround and everything that Kevin Willard was just talking about, the travel and fatigue could come into play Wednesday.
21 bench minutes and 3 shots taken from the bench. Just a Kapari dunk, the only points scored in the game by the bench.
You know, I this would be an interesting thing to ask, you know, maybe Chris Nocke about when we talk to him in a couple days, because I've never coached basketball, even at a youth level. But that's a real fine line between, like, even Kapari wasn't on the same page as some guys yesterday, but, like, can you blame him? Like, when you're on the road for a week and you play, you know, a couple snaps the other day and a couple minutes today, and I know snaps is a football term, I'm just saying, reps, shifts,
minutes,
moments. It wasn't really, in the Illinois game, it was more like moments. I don't know if it was minutes, right? And then you play a few days later, things are going to be disjointed. There is no second rotation or anything close to it. There's not even half of a second rotation, right? It's if Queen gets in trouble, foul trouble early, we get a little bit more Geronimo. It's Kapari as needed. It's the 2 minutes to 5 minutes Gillespie gets off his feet for Jay or DHS. Am I missing anything?
Yeah, and that's usually Jay because DHS really ain't a point guard.
But that's it.
Yeah. No, that's it. DHS led the bench in minutes played. He got seven. 7 minutes.
So, yeah. I mean, I think – I don't even know if Bone, it's so much about – I think these kids are in great shape and you know, it's not like they're playing three and four nights or anything like that. But I think it's more like if you want the bench you do trust enough to use to be remotely sharp, the minutes probably got to be a little more beefed up than what we've seen.
More from Kevin Willard speaking after the game yesterday, and he was asked about, you talk about the bench. No bench players for most of the second half.
Well, you know what? We've been on, I think this is our fifth national broadcast game, and the timeouts are so long.
Forever.
So second half substitutions, I've said this forever, and that it's really, you know, if you sub one of your starters out and it goes, and you let sit them for 3 minutes, with the timeouts, they sit for a really, really long time. And the way the game was going, the way the flow was, it just was like, all right, am I going to put someone in there at the 9 minute mark? And I asked all the guys, I said, you know, you guys want one? I said, you know, let me know. And they're like, no, we want to roll this to the end. And made some plays, made some big stops.
So it's interesting that we just had this discussion. So you hear what he had to say about it. You buy in what he said.
Yeah, the national part makes sense.
I am. I mean, there was a part of me that was like, if this thing goes overtime, this might be a 2-hour and 40-minute game.
Yeah. You get that
with
extra
all the timeouts
minute.
And overtime and the TV timeouts on top of it. So
wait till the tournament.
Oh, I know. But I'm like, you know, the idea of 2-hour college basketball games, not in that window, and especially overtime, it would have been over 2.5.
So they got their rest in.
Yeah, and look, I think also, you know, and we talked to Jimmy Sunshine about this, and he said he would have come home, but like, I think less flight, less schlepping your stuff back from the airport, like less, you know what I mean? You take your classes remote from wherever from wherever they were, somewhere in Bloomington, Indiana, and get some more practice in instead of losing practice time due to travel time. I'm for it.
More from Kevin Willard speaking after the game, talks about the 3-point shooting from Rice and Miguel.
Yeah, I mean, him and Selton in the second half, you know, Selt hit those 3 threes in a row. Rod hit the big three in the zone against their zone when they went zone. That kind of gave us. But, you know, give Indiana a lot of credit. Miles Rice comes out of nowhere, you know, shooting 20% and just was like, he looked like Steph Curry. So proud of this team. Bench was great. Even though they didn't play, the bench was, Chris, I tell you, it was the best bench I've ever had because they were giving suggestions. They were pumping the guys up. They kind of saw the flow of the game and understood it. And it's just a great road win.
I made that observation. I jotted that down in my notes. Like, the bench is into this game.
Yeah.
And you could see it when they would pan out on timeouts. You could see 4 and 5 guys jumping out of their seats, running to meet other guys on the court.
And like, I think you could see that in Illinois as well.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them.
Can we just point out, and I think we've alluded to this before, Maryland the last couple years, you could have given them a wide open 3-point shot and they're not hitting it most of the time. Like, this team could not shoot from the outside. And I think they made reference to it during the broadcast. Maybe Steve Lapis talked about it, but this team can shoot. Like, the three guys, especially Rice, Gillespie, and Miguel, they've got guys that can shoot.
I was just looking up KenPom rankings prior to the show, and I want to say last year they were in the 200s
easy.
In offensive efficiency. They're 20th this year. 20th in offensive efficiency.
It was disgusting how bad they were shooting from the outside, like the last 2 years.
Well, and they also are one of the better second chance scoring teams in the nation. They've got, I mean, offensive and defensive net ratings are not bad.
Yeah.
They're pretty balanced.
Yeah, 20th offensive efficiency, 24th defensive efficiency.
I mean, that's pretty legit.
Yeah.
So let's finish here. And Beltway Ben, I want to bring you on for a second because I just, your thoughts as we look ahead to Wisconsin, like that matchup coming up Wednesday, your initial thoughts.
Wisconsin, this is not, you know, the Wisconsin Maryland's dealt with the past 4 years, right? This Wisconsin team runs their guards, they're a very old team too, though. If you look at it, like, their leading scorer Tanji's in his 6 years, older than me. So this isn't a older team though, and so their season, they haven't played a ton together, but they do have two big guys in Crowell, and the other guy's 6'11 and 7 foot. They're not tougher than DQ and Joel Henry. So they have the size to match it, but Maryland can still, you know, finish at the rim. I'm not really that worried there. And I think this Wisconsin team has benefited. Like, they win the games they're supposed to, and they're well coached for the most part. But again, the Terps are better than them, in my opinion. And if you can win this game, me and Ken talked about it before the show, you don't have to play again for another 8 days. You're in the rankings Monday afternoon. So this is a massive opportunity for them. The students are back on campus. You're running off of two massive wins. It can't be a letdown. Got to win the game, but I think they have the good matchup. And again, it's a seasoned team, an older team, but I still think the Terps have a good matchup there.
Coming up next, we get to football, and the Super Bowl is set. What do we think? It's league at large. We'll hear from Patrick Mahomes. We'll hear from Jalen Hurts, maybe some others. Championship Sunday in the books, league at large, next here on The Fan.
Here's Barkley, a little shovel, looking for an edge, gets it. Saquon Barkley, first down. Touchdown!
Again, I kind of get emotional on things. I'm not going to get emotional right now, but man, it just showed the team. It's about team. This is the greatest team sport there is. I think that gets overlooked sometimes with, oh, look at how this play performed, and look at the scheme here. Like, it ain't about, it's part of it, it's about that. And anybody that plays, you know, the winner of the Bills and the Chiefs game, I guarantee they talk about how they came together as a team.
So you heard the highlight, very first play from scrimmage for the Eagles. Saquon Barkley goes 60 yards for a touchdown.
House call.
Yeah, turnovers killed the Commanders. This game was close for a little bit, but then it wasn't. Eagles win 55-23, Jason.
Well, and it's also the sort of the nature of the way this game unfolded. You go 18 plays, you hold the ball for 1/8 of the game. They held the ball for over 8 minutes. The Commanders did the opening drive. They convert, I think, 3 fourth downs. Mm-hmm. Then they get to a situation where you have to eventually settle for 3 over a touchdown. Don't even really get to take many shots into the end zone because of where that drive ended. But that's okay. You took 8 minutes off the clock. And then the first play is a house call on the ground. It's like, well, if you just bottle up Barkley a little bit. And then it turns out Barkley didn't even need to run that much. He didn't have volume because he didn't need volume because this game was over after the fourth turnover. Probably after the third turnover. I mean, everything the Commanders couldn't afford to do. Fall behind early. Unable to limit explosive runs in the first half. And protect the football. They did none of the above. And it still was a game. I mean, and it's still, when it's 34-23 or whatever it is, and they're driving, I'm like, if they finish this drive, Sirianni might start crapping his pants. And then, boom, another turnover.
Well, it ended up being a runaway, but both games had horrible officiating, controversial officiating. The clear hold on Saquon on that fourth down when it was 14-12.
Yes.
That led to a touchdown. The Saquon Barkley personal foul for the hit out of bounds, I thought, was extremely weak there.
I thought he was out of bounds.
But the turnovers, his foot wasn't even down yet, though. It gets way too ticky-tack there. But you can't turn the ball over. You can't, if you turn the ball over 4 times, you're not
on the
winning
road,
that football
come
game.
Come on, against
that
a team that's been to a Super Bowl before?
That fumbled kickoff at the end of the first half. That gave the Eagles 7
more. Unbelievable.
You're not winning a football game that way. And like, as you pointed
out,
Deami
Brown. Okay, then it's like, all right, well, they're getting into it here. They're going to come back and score the touchdown this time. Deami Brown gets the ball popped out. Yeah. Like it wasn't just 4 turnovers, which in and of itself is horrific. That's a magnitude of which you can't survive. But when they happen, it's like, my God,
Eckler falls down, gets back up, and because of the way the ball gets punched out, yeah. And they're so far ahead that Barkley didn't hit his number.
Because he didn't have any volume.
Yeah, he had 118 yards. I think it was
15 carries or whatever?
Yeah, 15 carries for buck 18. He gets along with Will Shipley, had 4 for 77.
Yeah. Hey, hats off to the Eagles. They were the best team in the NFC.
Yep,
they deserve this.
Yep. Oh, one other thing, Jason. The pass game, which looked terrible for a month.
Washington's defense sucks.
But it looked pretty good yesterday. Like Jalen Hurts looked like
Yeah.
Looked closer to good Jalen Hurts than we've seen in a while.
But there's about to be a major, major step up in weight class to what they're going to face in terms of a scheme flexibility standpoint, a personnel standpoint, an acumen of defensive coordinator standpoint, and Spags with 2 weeks to prepare. Like, I just think it's going to be a different level of assignment. Like, Marshawn Lattimore doesn't look like he ever really got back healthy. I mean, they had no corners. I mean,
did you know that you could give a team a touchdown if you kept jumping?
I didn't until 5 p.m. yesterday.
Right about to bring that up.
We're going to award them a touchdown if you keep doing that.
I almost tweeted out, why don't they just go ahead and award that AFC Championship game to Patrick Mahomes right now? Let's just get that out of the way. Let everybody fly to New Orleans.
Let's get to the AFC Championship game. Much better game, but here's basically where it ended.
Whole season for Buffalo on the line here. Then they come. He just desperately throws it up in the air. Incomplete. Kincaid was right there.
It's just so hard to get to the Super Bowl, and I don't take it for granted. And to be able to do it again at Arrowhead was special. I mean, last year it was awesome. You get there and you win it, but you're at a different stadium. And then being able to win it at Arrowhead, and then you get that trophy on that stage, and you look around, and there's not a seat empty. It is a special place, and I'm glad that I get to be a part of Chiefs Kingdom and here in Kansas City, because these moments that I'll have for the rest of my life.
Wow, shocking. It was sold out for the AFC Championship game, but
that jaded yet.
Yeah, I did find it interesting.
Well, there were 10,000 open seats for an Orioles playoff game. No one, and their response to that was seemingly to bitch about a non-existent salary
cap. CBS did not, in the moment, make as big a deal out of the fact that Dalton Kincaid could have caught that pass, and how the hell Josh Allen got it to him is ridiculous, because Spags caught a great blitz, and Josh Allen was not ready for it, and he got it to an open guy, but it was dropped. But the Chiefs, I think you said it, somebody else said it to me last night, they're inevitable. This is like, you let them hang around, they're going to win the game.
I don't think they made as big of a deal about it because Jim Nantz was firmly convinced there was a flag on the play.
Well, that was just in case. The flag, if you talk to conspiracy theorists, the flag was there in case he caught the ball, which was going to cancel out the catch.
Right.
But once he dropped the ball, the flag went away.
We don't need that flag anymore.
It was in the script, but then it was going, give me rewrite. Give me rewrite. Oh, we don't need it.
Yeah, we got picked
that's
that
overkill.
Jason,
look.
What I thought was interesting, too, they activated Mahomes' legs in that game like they haven't in a long time, because, quite frankly, they can't run the ball like they're used to running it.
And he was the drive finisher, two rushing touchdowns, neither one was a tush push, that's for sure. Both covered some ground. I think, this was a really interesting decision for the Bills to, basically run the ball more than they threw it in the playoffs. I don't quite understand that. And I guess they thought 29 was going to be enough, but I didn't think 29 was going to be enough at Arrowhead in a do-or-die game.
Chiefs hadn't scored more than 29 in a game this year. 32 is their max.
I know. But it wasn't enough in this game. And I just felt like Joe Brady again. They had one explosive passing play, and it was the pass to a touchdown to Holland.
Where was
they didn't
James
have any
Cook?
Other, they didn't have any other passes pass. Over 25 yards.
Can I ask, where was James Cook in the second half? Like, he dominated the one drive, and then he hardly saw the ball again.
Yeah, I just felt like the Bills did not have much of a cutting edge in terms of them ever really wanting to throw themselves to a lead in which they could dictate. I thought Josh Allen's arm was underutilized throughout the playoffs. Saying that, if Kincaid makes that leaping catch, maybe they at least send it to overtime. I also think the game turned for me on the Mahomes fumble.
Yes.
I thought they're going in to go 14-3 and it's lights out. Because if you look at the stats at halftime, it was like the Baltimore game. Kansas City, 7.2 yards per play. They were throwing it all over the place. And then I thought Andy Reid got conservative in the second half. And he pulled back. And instead of throwing it over Milano's head anywhere you wanted, like they could have done, I felt like both teams got a little tight. in the second half. But who's going to win that game ultimately? The guys with all the rings or the guys who can't get past the guys with all the rings?
And this is the only time that a team that lost a turnover battle won a playoff game. The Bills should have had six turnovers. Two picks were dropped early.
Josh Allen should have been turned over twice early. He was sped up and jittery and
at the start of that
feeling
game.
It.
He fumbled three times, was able to recover them. Ray Davis fumbled once. They were able to recover that.
They recovered five fumbles.
Yeah, they didn't turn the ball over at all.
They finished the season plus 28.
Yeah.
Not happening next year. I got news for you.
What did you think of the quarterback sneak that came up short, the Xavier Worthy catch on his shoulder?
How could that guy have been so sure that was a catch from his angle? I mean, he had to see through the back of the defender. I don't see how he saw that. Josh Allen, I think if he doesn't pull the ball back and go in with his back, they probably give it to him, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's a complete – they're just guessing.
They're totally guessing.
Totally guessing. Dude, Patrick Mahomes is 17-3 in the playoffs.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
And if you want to start thinking ahead for 2 weeks, Patrick Mahomes in his playoff career, when he's either an underdog or he's favored by 5 points or less, is 11-2 against the spread. So, and you can still get Chiefs money line at -120. So you're paying 10 cents more than just the 10 cents juice you would play on a normal bet. It's essentially a pick 'em. How could you? I'm already on it. And the Eagles are probably the better team, and the Eagles are definitely the better team in the trenches. And I still think the Eagles are going to lose.
Quickly, thoughts on Brian Schottenheimer?
Look, Jerry Jones doesn't care who his coach is, so why should I?
Yeah. Jerry's a buffoon. He's a total buffoon.
It is something. That was quite a Friday news dump, wasn't it?
Why even be a bandwagon fan of them? Like,
you should just ignore him. He's begging you to ignore them. Ignore them.
Telling you, I'm making all the money in the world. Why?
And I'm doing it my way, and I just want a puppet.
Yeah. Hey, coming up next, the Ravens have quietly gotten rid of one of their position coaches once the offseason has started. Could any more dismissals come? And also we'll get you the Todd Monken news. That's next here on The Fan. Let's get the good news out of the way first. Ravens, as it's been widely reported, they are extending Todd Monken. Obviously, next year he can always look for a promotion, but I did some digging. It sounds like he's getting a pretty good bag, and they're bringing him back to be offensive coordinator.
I mean, look, he should be among the highest compensated assistant coaches in the league. I think he's more than qualified to be a head coach. I think we talked about his candidacy before he got the job, before he was even a known candidate. And he's someone who made all the sense in the world. And what I love about him is he's not a climber. He doesn't wear his ambition like, you know, a nasty Musk. He doesn't come in the room thinking about his next job. And there's a lot of guys in this league who do. The Jacksonville Jaguars just picked one over Todd Monken. So he's far enough in his career that I think he has the bandwidth to understand what could still be in front of him, but to have a full appreciation for what is on his plate right now. And what he's done with Lamar Jackson, taking him to another level, is expert stuff. And just because you're not getting serious, you know, big time head coaching sniffs doesn't mean much, because we just talked about the Kansas City Chiefs, right? And we just talked about 17-3 with Mahomes in the playoffs. Well, what's really changed with their coach? Dave Tobe is running special teams for all those games.
Spags
is running the defense, and Andy Reid's running the offense. And we can shuffle out Nagy for Bieniemy, whoever. There's been three different guys, underlings, but it's Andy Reid's offense.
Yes.
So that's got a lot to do with why they're in the Super Bowl five times in 6 years. And these owners are not very adept, especially for guys who are a little older than middle-aged, at figuring out who could actually be more of an adult for them than not. And good on the Ravens for stepping up and giving him more money than he was making. And they probably should do that for Van Noy and Bateman, too.
Having continuity at the coordinator spot is massive. And Todd Monken, I think he more than deserves a shot as a head coach in the NFL. But looking at it, you know, from the Baltimore prism, it's massive that he's coming back. The jump that this offense took from year one to year two, I mean, let's see what year three has to bring. That's exciting for him to be back.
So let's go to the other end. It's been reported that Mark DeLeon, the inside linebackers coach, has been dismissed. And obviously the inside linebackers, I know Roquan Smith was first team all pro, but he did not look like Roquan Smith. Trenton Simpson turned out to be a disappointment this year. They were going with Malik Harrison and Chris Board at the other inside linebacker most of the time. So obviously it's hard to justify the Mark. You can't say Mark DeLeon did a great job.
No.
So could he, but is he the only one that is in on the chopping
block? I don't think he should be. I mean, we've documented productivity and players who did not play up to past expectations across that defense. A bunch of them in the secondary. Obviously, this linebacker situation, even along the D-line, Matabike and Jones not really taking a step forward. And Matabike's case, taking a significant one back. I'm glad they're taking this seriously. I'm glad, Harb, sometimes loyalty is too much of not enough of a double-edged sword for him. Like he gets cut by it more than he's willing to cut other people, I feel like. And he's too loyal to a fault,
yes,
at times. And he's a coach's coach, and his dad was a coach. He's from a family of coaches. And I understand where he's coming from in his heart. But I think his heart beats his mind sometimes when it comes to this. And I think he needs to continue to reflect about the composition of his staff on the secondary. We're going to talk about free agents this week. We're going to go over the list of available free agents. And we know that even if there's a number of guys who should appeal to the Ravens, and there would be, they're not winning bidding wars for players. So a lot of the change has to come from within and from player development. And lately, things have stagnated with their player development side on the defensive side of the ball. And yeah, linebackers coach, I mean, it would have been, I think, farcical not to make a change. The All-Pro was not an All-Pro, and he was not a $20 million linebacker. Not even close. And you had to rotate dudes next to him to try to get through the season. And the first 10 weeks matter.
Yes.
They matter.
Hey, they could have had a
home
playoff game.
And that was a joke. And 2 years ago, the first 10 weeks were a joke. So, I mean, it can't just be about, well, some guys left here for better jobs, and we just keep trucking with everybody else. No, you need to be constantly trying to get better as a coaching staff as well.
Yeah, it can't be a total situation where you're just going to run it back. And we talked last week about Eric DaCosta's comments saying not a ton of big decisions this year compared to next year, but you got to at least tweak some things. We're not advocating for wholesale changes on the coaching staff, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's another move there.
Okay, Jason, well, let's talk about one. And we talked about it in season. Chris Hewitt. What do you think about him, for example?
I think the secondary's been a big issue for years. And I think, I know that guys have complained amongst each other to other friends on other teams in the league, and it's even made it to coaching staffs in other places in this league that they had problems in that building with Chris Hewitt. We talked about it on air in real time. It's been brought up in the past. And their failures to communicate, to play as a collective, it's been a disease that's flared up with way too much regularity. I don't see how you just look past it or say it can't happen again when it's happened far too often. And it's happened with, I mean, Eric DaCosta can take a victory lap about the Eddie Jackson signing if he wants to, like he kind of did, which was an odd flex. That was something. But, like, he gave him nothing, and Marcus gave him nothing, and Brandon Stevens gave him nothing but bad play. And, like, you had to take your best playmaker and move him to another position because it was the last resort. And, yes, our Darius developed well, but, I mean, we thought coming into the year that was the strength of the team.
Yeah, and we also remember, it wasn't that long ago, we were talking about, well, they need to sign Brandon Stevens to an extension. And they were willing to. Yes.
They talked about it. They got bailed out because he thought he could do better.
Yes.
But, like, no, I think something is wrong back there. And a different communicator, a different messenger, imparting a different message that gets through in the summer. Not once you bring Dean Pease out of retirement in October to help you. Like, I think there should probably be ramifications for that. And it was a fairly, and what they got back to was kind of vanilla and kind of baseline and kind of fundamental.
But it worked.
It wasn't next level.
No.
It worked against
if they don't
CJ Stroud when it's 30-0 after a quarter. I mean, it worked against Bailey Zappi. It worked against Russ when he was cooked. I mean,
they got to force more turnovers.
Yes.
That has to be an emphasis heading into next year, where they went from leading the league in turnovers in 2023 to basically seeing their takeaways cut in half. And we keep bringing up how they don't force turnovers in the playoffs. That needs to change.
Super Bowl is set. It's Chiefs and Eagles. You'll hear that right here on 105.7 The Fan, Westwood One's coverage of the Super Bowl coming up a week from Sunday. But coming up next, we switch to baseball. We hit the hot corner, and David Rubenstein, owner of the Orioles, did an interview with Yahoo Finance. Before we step out, thank you, Beltway Ben. I keep forgetting. Fifth caller, 410-583-1057. You win two tickets to see Nine Inch Nails. It's August 26th at CFG Arena, 410-583-1057. You get tickets to see Nine Inch Nails. David Rubenstein talking to Yahoo Finance. What do you have to say? You'll hear it next here on The Fan.